Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, my friends. It is Wednesday, the second day of March 2011. We're going to be live here for at least the next 3 hours. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, former head of policy at the U.S. Treasury, is going to be joining us to talk about government shutdown, what's happening with the union rebellions around the country, what's unfolding in the overall bond market. And he's also going to give us his take on the Middle East uprising spreading into North Africa and open talk of a U.S. invasion of Libya. Russian military is reporting that airstrikes in Libya did not take place against protesting crowds. Not that I'm a fan of Gaddafi, but the media told us 2 weeks ago that he'd fled to Venezuela. I mean, they may tell us tomorrow that he's escaped to Neverland in a hot air balloon. So we're going to be going over that. We're also going to get into Ben Bernanke's plan worked. What happens next? The Associated Press Act said. So what happens next? What is the next act in this play? Number one, Bernanke's plan worked for the bankers. It didn't work for the people. So we're going to be going over that and what's unfolding with the economy today as well. I barely had time to read it this morning, and I tend to not really cover news items that I'm in, but this really signifies that the establishment realizes that we can't be ignored any longer. Coming out on Friday, one of the biggest stories in this month's Rolling Stone, and it comes out this Friday, the article is now out, though I'm told it's even longer with some sidebars and other information in the physical magazine. Talk Radio's Alex Jones, the most paranoid man in America. I talked to the author. He's not happy with that headline. His headline was Alex Jones versus the New World Order. Hal Jones is trying to overthrow the global Stasi Borg state, one conspiracy theory at a time. And it's one of the fairest pieces that I've ever seen in mainstream news. So the writer did keep his word on the piece, though he did a few deceptive straw men oversimplifications dealing with world population reduction and things along those lines. Very interesting article out of Rolling Stone, Talk Radio's Alex Jones, the most paranoid man in America. And it is a powerful, long, 8-page article. It's about 4,500 words. The author wasn't happy to a certain degree because a lot of the context, he said, was taken out. It was 7,000-plus words long, but that's routine for magazines to cut things. Rolling Stone doesn't run 7,000-word articles. The longest are about 6,000. But it is, he's not sure yet, but he believes it's going to be the longest article in this issue that has some pop person on the cover riding a rocket. But it'll certainly wake a lot of folks up and point them towards this radio broadcast. I didn't get any sleep, really, a couple hours on Sunday night. Didn't get any sleep, really, when I got back. If I stay up too late, then I can't go to sleep. So I was a little bit out of it yesterday. People probably couldn't tell. But I did get about 9 hours sleep last night. And it's almost like once you get sleep, you're a little bit dingy. But I'm here on the air today after that blitz in New York City, turning the lemons of the whole Charlie Sheen situation into lemonade. And we'll probably have a little bit more on that today. All the trials and tribulations of Charlie Sheen that is the biggest news story in the world right now. I mean, it's on every radio station, every newspaper, TV all over the world, and it all started here. Very strange. We're also going to have open phones throughout the broadcast. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts again joins us coming up in the third hour. We'll have open phones then. We have Dr. Joel Wallach joining us to get into mineral deficiencies. But we're going to open the phones up on the other side of this quick break, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
It is Wednesday, the second day of March 2011. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts joins us in the last 30 minutes of the transmission today to get into all the different things that are happening in the economy, the government shutdown that's looming, his take on the economy, oil, other commodities like gold and silver still rocketing upwards. That is all coming up today. Dr. Joel Wallach will also be joining us to get into health issues that are extremely important and mineral deficiencies in the second hour. But we will have open phones in the first and third hour today. The toll-free number to join us on air is 1-800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Here out of the gates, I want to make an announcement. We had said that Monday was the deadline to have the answer to 1984 is 1776 video contest entries exposing the TSA, globalist takeover, the New World Order. You could do fiction, you could do nonfiction, video of activism. The sky's the limit. And I have to say, there is no doubt of the six or seven contests I've done in the last few years, this is the biggest response, the biggest effect, and the largest amount of entries. There is no doubt we're estimating around 1,500 video entries, 1,500, and normally we get a couple hundred, and it is more than we can chew, and normally it takes me a week or two longer to judge them and then announce the winner, and that's undoubtedly going to happen this time. I mean, you want me to be able to watch these. You want me to be able to post them all, at least, and go over them, and a lot of people's emails bounce sometimes. As long as your upload date is by Monday at midnight, as long as we get it by midnight tonight, you can send them to the contest entry email address that's on the different page entries where we've posted all the different videos and things that people produced. And we will do our very best to post all of the entries that basically follow the rules. And the only rule is you got to have Infowars.com on it somewhere in the video. So a lot of people submit videos that were made a year ago, 2 years ago, and they just don't even follow that basic rule. But we're going to be posting everything in more big rollouts. You know, every day we're posting scores of videos and flyers and activist materials that folks have produced. But it is a daunting task, but a very exciting task, and nevertheless, to get all of these entries posted on Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, and then to be able to judge them. But I will announce, not this Friday, but next Friday, the winner, because it'll take days and days just to make sure we have all the videos and then to go back over the different videos that have been turned into us, obviously. In fact, it gives me a headache just imagining it. But it's such a exciting activist tool. I mean, when you get 1,500 or more videos in, and I'd say the average video has got about 5,000 views right now. Those will grow into the tens of thousands over time. Can you imagine the millions of people that are going to see these videos over the next few years that you have successfully flooded YouTube and other video sites with? I mean, it is just having a massive, unmeasurable activist effect on the web. So I salute all of you. You all win, regardless if you don't win the $7,000 for first place, $2,000 for second place, and $1,000 for third place. Now, the V for Victory campaign continues. That is a add-on, because Paul Watson had the idea of the answer to 1984-1776 contest. You won't be precluded from the contest if you have V for Victory symbols in your video. In fact, I think that's an added attribute. But it's not needed for you to be able to be the winner. So, again, that is coming up. But you've got until midnight tonight to get those into us if you haven't seen yours posted or haven't had a chance to get it into us yet. And so we've extended that a few days for you, as long as the upload date is this Monday, 2 days ago, or a day and a half ago. So that's the latest developments for you on that front. Okay, the news. Talk Radio's Alex Jones, the most paranoid man in America. Hal Jones is trying to overthrow the global Stasi Borg state, one conspiracy theory at a time. This went out this morning. I started getting emails and messages concerning it. And it is one of the big featured stories in the it comes out twice a month. So this month's first issue, the first March issue of Rolling Stone hits newsstands Friday. But the article that is overall one of the fairer ones I've seen, it's still got some straw man disinformation in it, is now out there for everyone. Talk Radio's Alex Jones, the most paranoid man in America. Really, I'm paranoid. I don't like the TSA now rolling out on the streets of America, putting their hands down our pants. TSA's looking at full-body x-rays in the airports now. So is the Australian equivalent of the TSA. We talked about global financial meltdowns caused by derivatives more than 11 years ago. Now it's happened. We talked about the danger of military intervention in Libya. Now they're openly pushing for it. People, the media has this cliche that I'm paranoid. I mean, when I read the UN openly saying they want to establish a authoritarian world government, or when I read the Financial Times of London pushing a authoritarian world government and telling us how authoritarianism is good, or countless globalists saying we want green fascism, that's their word, not mine, and how great authoritarianism is. And they're putting telescreens up in 9,000 locations saying, watch your neighbors. And the federal government's openly calling for an internet kill switch. The reason this radio broadcast and my videos and the other media systems we use are rising so fast is because we've got our finger on the pulse of the world. And we know the globalist inside and out, and we understand their program. And yes, it's shocking, it's frightening to know all of this is happening. But it's better to be able to know the threat is coming and meet it and face it down. Let me just run through some of the news headlines here for you today. Russian military reports airstrikes in Libya did not take place. Editors note the corporate media faithfully reads from the script provided by the government and the Pentagon. Remember, Saddam's aluminum tubes, WMDs, and babies thrown out of incubators. Remember, the Gulf of Tonkin. War invariably begins with lies. As the Nazi Goering knew, he said the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders, either through lies, fear, or both. The reports of Libya mobilizing its air force against its own people quickly spread around the world, kind of like they said Iran to Venezuela. However, Russia's military chief said they have been monitoring from space, and the pictures tell a different story. According to Al Jazeera and BBC, on February 21st, Libyan government inflicted airstrikes on Benghazi, the country's largest city, and on the capital of Tripoli. However, the Russian military monitoring the unrest via satellite from the very beginning says nothing of the sort was going on the ground. At this point, the Russian military is saying that as far as they're concerned, the attacks some media were reporting never occurred. These same sources in Russian military establishment say they are also monitoring the situation around Libya's oil pumping facilities. And here is a quote. The Libyan government has shut down the internet and phone lines, and the information war is underway. Although one of the most professional networks in the world, it has been cautioned that Al Jazeera is not a neutral actor. The Russian government said it is subordinate to the Emir of Qatar and the Qatar government, which is also an autocracy. By picking and choosing what to report, Al Jazeera's coverage of Libya is biased. This is evident when one studies Al Jazeera coverage of Bahrain, which has been restrained due to political ties with the leaders of Bahrain and Qatar. Reports by Al Jazeera and Libya, jets firing on protesters in Tripoli and the major cities are unverified and questionable. Here, too, the reports that Libya jets have been attacking people in the streets have not been verified. No visual evidence of the jet attacks has been shown, while visual confirmation about other events have been coming out of Libya. And it just goes on from there. Now, you did have paramilitary groups attacking military bases. And what do you think a military is going to do? What do you think if paramilitary groups attacked U.S. military bases? What would happen? What do you think would unfold? I'm again not defending Muammar Gaddafi. The point is, he didn't fly to Venezuela like we were told. That was the British government saying that, who previously controlled Libya before Gaddafi took over. They controlled it through the puppet king there. They think they own those oil fields, just like they think they own the oil fields of Iran. When they overthrew Mossadegh in 53, they were there previously there with Anglo-American oil, now today known as British Petroleum. So that is some of the news on that front. Here's another report by Paul Joseph Watson at prisonplanet.com. Russian military claims Libyan airstrikes did not happen. The Russian military claims that the supposed airstrikes launched by Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi against protesters last week did not happen, suggesting they were a key event seized upon by the global media to justify humanitarian military intervention was a contrived hoax. According to Russian Today correspondent, top officials and Russian Joint Chiefs of Staff monitoring images from space satellites have concluded some of the reports made by Western media are not entirely corresponding with the pictures they are getting. Specifically, the supposed airstrikes that took place February 22nd over Benghazi and Tripoli, which were widely reported by the BBC and Al Jazeera, were not registered by the Russian military chief studying the images coming in from the satellites. And then it has the quotes here. The pictures show that, quote, nothing of that sort has been going on the ground, states the reporter who talked to the Joint Chiefs, adding that there is also no evidence from footage shot by television cameras which would suggest that airborne attacks took place. Here's another one. CNBC, Libyan supply distribution could push oil to $130 a barrel. Echoes of Lindsey Williams 4 months ago here. Cameron backtracks on Libyan no-fly zone plan as U.S. distances itself. London Guardian, rebels fight Gaddafi forces over Libyan oil port. AP. More than 140,000 people flee Libya. Are we seeing the spark that's going to set off World War III?
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show. Because there's a war on for your mind.
You know, I've thought I've done pretty good. It's been about 2 years since I've had a stomach virus. And my oldest daughter is at home sick today, been throwing up all night, and I felt really bad when I went on air. I thought I was just tired, but I've definitely got a stomach virus. I was just in there tossing up my cookies, as they say, but I'm going to try to stay here on air, but I'm definitely getting sicker by the minute. We're lining up Watson, Paul Watson, to come in and then try to move Dr. Paul Craig Roberts to earlier because there's all this news and information that really needs to be covered. But I'm probably going to have to pull the ejection seat here pretty soon. So please stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. And my daughter, it was only a 24-hour deal. She was sick yesterday afternoon. She's a lot better this morning. So hopefully it's a 24-hour deal. I'll be back tomorrow here live with you. There's so much that I need to cover. Let me just continue here with the news. Libyan rebels are marching west as fronts firm. So they're saying that in the last 2 days, Gaddafi's forces launched out of Tripoli and several other cities have tried to retake areas and have been repulsed. The rebels have also tried to take new territory and they've been repulsed. So that's what they mean using a World War I type term of the fronts firming, that both sides are basically now going into a stagnant, protracted position. And the globalists have always said that that's their plan. They want to break Libya into three parts, at least two parts, Iraq into four to six parts, Saudi Arabia into two to three parts, Egypt into two parts. That way a country never gets strong. And then you can have different rebel groups that you can demonize as terrorists and have a place to drop bombs and make money whenever you want. And it looks like that's where this is going. We've been hearing a lot of talk. It's confirmed U.S. aircraft carriers have now entered the waters in the area. They've now gone through the major Suez Canal area. And so the forces are massing there. And there's this continual drumbeat that is going on ad nauseum for U.S. forces, UN/NATO forces, to invade the eastern area of Libya that borders the already globalist-controlled Egypt and continue the domino effect into other areas of the Middle East. On the economic front, oil jumps above $100 a barrel. In futures, it's trading as high as $115.97. So we have those developments as well. But think about it. They're going to now try an invasion of Libya in the name of punishing Muammar Gaddafi for strafing crowds. It's probably not even true. And our supposed government has over 1,000 drones in Pakistan and Afghanistan bombing anyone and everyone and saying they can kill several hundred people who are innocent and that it's a good thing because it's collateral damage. And what is this overall triggering? It's an accelerating the increase in oil prices. The underpinning is a dollar devaluation, but now the big driver is destabilization and almost no oil or gas coming out of Libya. Saudi Arabians on Sunday promised to massively increase output as a way to stave off increases and try to keep stability, but now they're not able to produce at the levels they said they would. Libyan supply disruption could push oil to $130 a barrel, official says. Libya's troubles created the country's worst energy crisis in decades, and supply disruption to world markets could push oil above $130 a barrel in next month if troubles persist. Chairman of Libya's National Oil Corporation told Reuters. He did not specify whether he was referring to Brent or U.S. sweet crude, and it goes on from there. As I mentioned earlier, I want to continue along this line. Cameron backtracks on Libya no-fly zone plan as U.S. distanced itself. David Cameron's suggestion of establishing no-fly zone over Libya and arming rebels rejected by U.S. forces in France. Watson is going to come back in the next segment, joining us via video Skype from England. He'll continue to break down more than 140,000 people flee Libya, trying to go into Egypt, trying to go into Tunisia, trying to go into Italy, where they're already having riots over how many third world people are pouring into the country. Again, Libyan rebels march west as fronts firm as they try to mass forces for a big push towards Tripoli. Chavez says U.S. distorting situation in Libya to justify invasion. Well, that's true. We'll be right back. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts coming up, Paul Watson coming up, and a lot more. And if I can get a little bit better, I'll be back with you as well.
Look at your young men fighting. Look at your women crying. Look at your young men dying the way they've always done before. Look at the hate we're breeding. Look at the fear we're feeding. Look at the lives we're leading
to the Alex Jones Show for this Wednesday, March the 2nd edition. I'm Paul Joseph Watson, the editor of PrisonPlanet.com, and I'll be filling in for Alex for the foreseeable future, for the rest of the hour at least, because obviously, as Alex explained before the break, he's very ill at the moment, with a stomach bug. So, what's happening regarding the news? Well, of course, the top story this morning on PrisonPlanet.com was Russian military claims Libya airstrikes did not happen. Images from space suggest attack was contrived to create pretext for humanitarian military intervention. And in fact, if the board can queue up that clip from Russia Today and let me know when it's ready, then we'll go ahead and play that in a minute or so. Basically, top Russian military chiefs of staff have told Russia Today that the February 22nd supposed airstrike conducted by Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's forces over Benghazi and Tripoli, which of course were aggressively hyped by the likes of BBC News and Al Jazeera as a perfect pretext for a military intervention on, quote, humanitarian grounds, never in fact took place. They've got satellite imagery from space focused on Libya, and it's at the level, supposedly, where they can tell whether there's been an airborne attack. And the Russian military chiefs of staff are saying that no such attack took place. That's not to say that Gaddafi's regime is not using military airstrikes at the moment, and certainly over the last few days, because, of course, the fighting in the eastern region of the country has been fierce between the rebels and Gaddafi's forces. But, of course, we were sold on the humanitarian intervention on the basis that Gaddafi had launched airstrikes against protesters on February 22nd last week. So they're saying that now there's no evidence that that actually happened. And you can argue that, well, it's Russia. Obviously, they're going to disagree with the official narrative because obviously you had the Russian Premier Medvedev come out and say that the Middle East wave of revolutions in the Middle East and North Africa is basically just going to cause a complete dislocation. And he's obviously taking an opposing view to the mass of the Western media, who are, of course, glorifying it all as a great organic expression of democracy. But as I pointed out in the article, even with a so-called humanitarian-led war, not to mention preemptive attacks, there's always a manipulation to justify it. Look back to the Iraqi incubator babies hoax, where Saddam Hussein's forces before the first Gulf War were accused of removing babies from their incubators in Kuwait and throwing them on the hospital floors, leaving them for dead. It turned out that that was a completely contrived, manufactured hoax cooked up by the American PR firm Hill and Knowlton in league with the Kuwaiti government in exile. Turned out to be a complete hoax, in fact led by George H.W. Bush's former staffer Craig Fuller, who was at the time tasked to, quote, devise a campaign to win American support for the war. So they cooked up this fake humanitarian crisis, manipulated the global population into feeling empathy for the supposed suffering that was taking place. It was all completely contrived. Again, Bill Clinton's attack on Serbia in the 90s was launched on this complete fabrication of the, quote, Serbian concentration camps. And if you go to view the video at the bottom of the article, and in fact, that's another good video clip to play on the show, if the guys can cue that up and tell me when it's ready. Basically, a British TV film crew, I believe it was from ITN, went to this Serbian relief camp where Bosnian refugees were housed. And they filmed them from inside a barbed wire pen. Now, it wasn't the refugees that were inside the barbed wire pen, it was the film crew. But they filmed through the barbed wire, through to the outside where all the refugees are gathered. But then when they played the footage in later TV news reports, they gave the commentary that the Serbian, sorry, the Bosnian refugees were actually inside the barbed wire pen. So they made it appear as if they were incarcerated, imprisoned against their will, when in fact they were basically in a refugee camp. They were getting food and water. They were being treated completely humanely, as in the clip that we've got in the article, a Fox News and CNN correspondent who was there at the time testifies to. And we're going to go to that video right now.
In 1990, an age-old conflict in the Balkans erupted into civil war. A multi-sided and complicated overseas struggle was packaged by the mainstream media as a tidy melodrama. The predominantly Christian Serbs were cast as the villains. A key maneuver employed to demonize them involved a photo shoot.
The news has always been used to stampede our reason with a perception and emotion. When you're talking about war, you get those heart-tugging appeals to pity in particular. And we've seen that again, using images.
Benjamin Works, president of the Strategic Issues Research Institute, is a military affairs analyst for Fox News and CNN. He recalls the emergency shelters set up by the Serbs to accommodate Bosnian refugees.
I remember very vividly seeing tours by the camp commander showing the mess hall, showing food that, you know, I wouldn't pay money for, but I'd gladly eat if it were free. And yet this was turned into a sensational story about concentration camps. And the propaganda twist on that came out of both the electronic media and the newspapers and very glaring covers on Time magazine and such.
Judgment, an independent expose, reveals how a British film crew photographed a Bosnian emergency shelter to look like a Nazi concentration camp. The film crew positioned themselves inside a barbed wire enclosure to shoot out at refugees, who were free to come and go as they pleased. The camera zeroed in on a refugee whose emaciated appearance was the result of a birth defect.
We found that all of these allegations of a concentration camp were really frauds perpetrated by the reporters. And in fact, at least one, Roy Gutman, won a Pulitzer Prize for this kind of fabrication.
And the image that helped motivate American involvement in an overseas entanglement was a total fake.
So there you have it, the pretext for the bombing of Serbia based on a total fabrication, a total fake, a manipulation of basically people's emotion and people's empathy with human suffering, which is precisely what we see now with Libya. And of course, in that example, they filmed an emaciated guy who had a birth defect and tried to claim that his physical condition was a result of his mistreatment in this, quote, concentration camp, which was actually a refugee relief center. Now we're going to go to the Russia Today video, which talks about how the so-called airstrike on protesters launched by Gaddafi last week did not take place. So we go to this clip now.
Well, the reports of Libya mobilizing its air force against its own people spread quickly around the world. But Russia's military chief says that they've been monitoring from space, and the pictures tell a different story. Well, Arty's Irina Galushko can tell us more on this now. Irina, what are they saying?
Well, Alice, at this point, we have information from Russia's joint staff who are saying that they have been monitoring the situation in Libya from space via satellites since the beginning of the unrest in the country. And according to them, some of the reports made by the Western media are not entirely corresponding to the pictures that they are getting. To be more precise, according to Al Jazeera and to BBC, on the 22nd of February, Libyan government has inflicted airstrikes on Benghazi, the biggest city in the country, and on Tripoli. And according to Russia's military, they have not registered any of those air strikes. According to them, the pictures show that nothing of that sort has been going on the ground. Now, if we also focus on the pictures, on the footage that we've been getting from the country, we may be able to notice that there are absolutely no signs of any destruction inflicted by attacks from air or by Libyan Air Force in those pictures. So at this point, Russia's military military is saying that as far as they're concerned, they have not seen any attacks, so they can pretty much make a judgment that those attacks, which the Western media has been reporting on, have not been made. Also, Russian military is also working in very close cooperation with Russia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and they're monitoring not just the military situation, not just Tripoli and other cities in Libya. They're also paying a very close attention to the oil extraction facilities, and they are keeping us up to date as to what is happening on the ground from space.
Okay, Irina, many thanks for the update. That was RT's Irina Galushka there reporting from...
You have Russia Today reporting on the fact that the top U.S. military chiefs of staff say that the supposed airstrikes that launched this whole mass concern for humanitarian suffering from the same people who gave you Predator drone airstrikes that kill hundreds of people every month did, in fact, never take place. Can we believe the Russians? Well, we can certainly believe the fact that almost every one of these, quote, humanitarian wars has been contrived on fabricated purposes, tricked up shocks and outrages, many of which are manufactured by PR firms and, in fact, TV news crews, as we saw with the Serbian example. Latest news from Libya, more than 140,000 people flee Libya. Voice of America is reporting the United Nations Refugee Agency says over the past 10 days, more than 140,000 people have fled to Egypt and Tunisia from Libya. The UNHCR says tens of thousands of people are stuck at the borders and are in urgent need of help. So you've got the refugee crisis spiking. Of course, you've got oil shooting up close again, I believe, to $100 a barrel. And now we've got Governor Haley Barbour coming out and accusing the Obama administration of deliberately hiking energy costs for their green economy. CNN reporting Barbour, Obama's policies to drive up energy prices. CNN, with price of gasoline rising for the eighth consecutive day, Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour accused the Obama administration of hiking energy costs in an effort to promote alternative fuels. And of course, it's not really about alternative fuels. It's about Obama's new green surf economy. The fact is that alternative fuels like biofuels do very little to bridge the gap that any withdrawal of fossil fuels will create. And indeed, you know, a lot of environmentalists support these biofuels when in fact they're replacing endangered flora and fauna in many areas of the world, and also thereby directly impacting animal species which are threatened with extinction. So the very process that's supposed to save the planet is in fact killing the planet in many areas, because huge areas of forests are being cleared for the plantation of these biofuels, which are doing very little to fill the gap as, quote, an alternative fuel. Well, here Barbour's saying, quote, in 2008, $4 gasoline brought my state to its knees before Wall Street melted down, and we have blown through $3 a gallon on our way to $4. Barbour, a Republican who is seriously considering a White House bid, said Wednesday in a speech to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, we don't need that where I am. But this administration's policies have been designed to drive up the cost of energy in the name of reducing pollution, in the name of making very expensive alternative fuels more economically competitive. Now, you also have to, I mean, Barbour's accusing Obama of deliberately driving up energy prices. We've been through the evidence over the past couple of weeks where these rolling blackouts, which were caused, prompted by the cold weather, but which would not have been a problem unless the Obama administration and the EPA, through their enforcement of carbon tax emission rulings, have not almost completely bankrupted the coal industry and prevented dozens of new coal-fired plants from being built, specifically in the Texas area. So we've enunciated at length the fact that Obama's energy policy is causing blackouts and energy shortages. And now Haley Barbour's pointing out that the Obama administration wants to hike costs of energy in an effort to promote alternative fuels. They're not concerned about promoting alternative fuels. They're only concerned about being the water carriers for the post-industrial revolution that the globalists want to ram through. And of course, the major tenet of that is this so-called green economy, which has nothing to do with saving the environment and everything to do with lowering living standards. The green economy in Spain has wrought absolute devastation on their economy, 20% unemployment. And the Obama administration is overseeing a similar process here over there in the United States. We'll be back with your calls on The Alex Jones Show. Stay tuned and watch the live stream at prisonplanet.tv, as always. Jones Show. Kurt Nimmo headline on prisonplanet.com. New Hampshire moves to criminalize TSA grope down procedures. New Hampshire may soon criminalize the TSA's intrusive pat downs and naked body porno scanners as sexual assault. And we've got a clip from WMUR relating to this story, which we'll go ahead and roll now.
Yeah, first, let's point out that Boston-Manchester Regional Airport doesn't have any of those controversial body scanners, but the legislation is clear. If it's passed, pat-downs or use of technology to view certain body parts during random security screenings could put TSA agents in violation of New Hampshire law.
Call it what it is. It's sexual assault.
For backers of the bill, TSA pat-downs and body scans amount to a crime, and the agents who conduct the search are criminals.
Let's put their name on our sex offender registry, and maybe that will tell them, look, New Hampshire means business. That is a crime in this state, and we should charge them every single time.
It wasn't a large crowd in support of the bill to criminalize random pat-downs and body scans in New Hampshire, but the support was passionate.
Just tear the Constitution up and throw it away.
Concord's Darren Tapp says security procedures cost him a trip home for the holidays in December.
This time, the news is talking about enhanced pat-downs. I cried on the phone with my mother explaining that I did not wish to submit to enhanced pat-downs. There are people in Libya right now who have just done their job.
I'm not in Libya. I am in the United States.
His frustration bubbled over after the hearing when he confronted a member of the Criminal Justice Committee.
You do not have to go on a plane. That is your choice.
As for the TSA, officials won't comment on pending legislation, except to say that security checkpoints and airports are federal jurisdiction. And for some members of the Criminal Justice Committee, that's where the question should lie.
We have to understand that if things need to be changed, they have to be done at the federal level and not at the state level.
I know some backers of the bill say the TSA needs to do away with random screenings altogether and instead search only those passengers who look or act suspicious. Of course, that could open up a whole new can of worms, and some might say that is exactly the definition of profiling. Reporting live, Josh McKelvin, WMUR.
So there we have it. And then we had one of the protesters being told, well, you don't have to get on an airplane, you don't have to fly. Oh, really? Well, how about walking down the street? How about getting in your car and going down the highway? How about taking a ride on the train, just as the members of a tourist group did in when they were arriving in Savannah a few weeks ago. And of course, we had the story out of AOL Travel News and the footage which went viral on YouTube, which shows the TSA harassing and searching passengers who were disembarking from their train. They weren't even getting on the train. They were trying to leave the train station. They were ordered to go through a TSA grope down procedure, including 2 9-year-old children. And after the fact, when the story went viral, when it got big, TSA blogger Bob, this individual who they routinely wheel out to explain away TSA abuses, came out and said that the individuals involved in the incident had a choice. They didn't have to enter the train station and that they could have avoided the Viper checkpoint pat-down, grope-down, which in fact, as we learned, was a complete lie, a fabrication. The firefighter who was leading the tourist group said that as soon as they got off the train, they were swarmed by TSA thugs who ordered them to enter the train station to, quote, collect their luggage, even though their luggage was out on the platform of the train. So, again, TSA caught complete fabrications to cover up their abusive agenda and the fact that this Viper checkpoint was an unreasonable search and violated the Fourth Amendment. We'll be back to talk about it with your calls on the Alex Jones Show Live, prisonplanet.tv. Stay tuned.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back. Paul Watson filling in for Alex Jones on this March 2nd, 2011 edition of the Alex Jones Show. Now, before the break, we were talking about the TSA. Now in New Hampshire, they're introducing a bill which would basically make the grope down procedures an act of sexual harassment, which is exactly what it is. And of course, we had the incident in Savannah where the group of it was a firefighter leading a group of 30 or 40 people in a tourist group. They disembarked from the train. They'd finished their journey. They were wanting to leave the station. Their luggage was out on the platform. But as soon as they stepped off the train, they were swarmed by TSA thugs who told them to enter the train station and subject themselves to a pat-down, grope-down search, which included these TSA thugs doing the pat-down on 2 9-year-old boys. The TSA later tried to cover up what was blatantly a clear violation of the Fourth Amendment, therefore illegal and unreasonable search, by claiming that the individuals on the train had the choice to leave the station, that they didn't have to go through the pat-down, when in fact the firefighter who was involved in the incident said the exact opposite. And here's what he said, quote, "When we got off in Savannah, there were TSA agents out on the platform that told us to go inside to get our luggage." Bearing in mind their luggage was actually on the platform, they didn't need to go and collect it. "So we were part of about 20 people that wandered inside. As soon as we went inside the door, there were about 14 TSA agents waiting, and they ushered us into a roped-off holding area. They stated we were all being searched, as well as our luggage," that is their hand luggage. "We told them we just got off the train. They said they didn't care that if we entered the building, we were subject to search. We told them we didn't want to enter the building, that they told us to." And he writes that their luggage was never inside. It was waiting for them on the train platform. So, again, TSA on their own website has been caught in a clear lie, saying that these people had the choice to leave the station when, in fact, they were told to enter the station by TSA goons so they could conduct this grope down of the 9-year-old boys. Very important, of course, for basically a completely empty train station. They'd finished their journey. So, again, you can't avoid it by not flying. It's everywhere. It's in the train stations. It's on the highways. It's on the street corners. The mobile radiation scanners are coming to your neighborhood. You can't avoid it by burying your head in the sand and saying, "Oh, I'll just not fly," when it's all coming to your doorstep, which is why we need to support the actions of those in New Hampshire to make the grope down procedure itself an act of sexual harassment. And of course, we need to lobby and support the airports to kick out the TSA altogether and replace them with private screeners. Let's go to a call now, and it's Stacy in California. You're on the air. Go ahead, Stacy. Ben in Indiana, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Paul. I'm a huge InfoWars supporter. I'm a Prison Planet TV member, and I just wanted to say thanks for all the work you guys do, and you guys really inspired me to take action against the globalists. I wanted to bring up a point. The Fox Nation Mediaite video of the Alex Jones appearing on The View seems to be edited, where he says building seven. They cut out the seven. It sounds like he's just saying buildings, which is more obscure. But I urge you guys to check that out and see if I'm correct about that.
Yeah, I received an email about that. Didn't get a chance to look at the video today, but we'll definitely do so, because, of course, if they edited out seven in the words building seven, then that's another cover-up, just as they edited in the wrong footage when Ron Paul won the CPAC poll. Very devious on behalf of Fox News, so we'll definitely check into that. We'll be back with more of your calls after the break on the Alex Jones.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Paul Joseph Watson filling in for Alex Jones today. Oil has jumped to $101 a barrel, over 101, in fact, on the back of news that an airstrike near an oil terminal was launched by Gaddafi's forces. Of course, we were talking about last week's airstrike in the previous segment. There's no doubt that Gaddafi is now employing airstrikes against these rebels in the east of the country. Reuters, oil rose on Wednesday as escalating violence in Libya threatened the OPEC nation's oil infrastructure and markets braced for a potential prolonged disruption. Prices jumped to close in on a fresh 2.5-year high on news that fresh airstrikes hit Brega, about 2 kilometres from a Libyan oil terminal, after Muammar Gaddafi launched a land and air offensive to retake territory in Libya's east. Quote, it looks like an attack fairly close to what is one of Libya's largest storage and export terminals, said Andy Labau, trader at MF Global in New York. Also, Reuters reporting, rebels in East Libya want a UN-backed airstrike. Oh, now we see the pretext for humanitarian interventionism coming to the fore, which is interesting because Kurt Nimmo wrote an article a couple of days ago in which one of the rebel leaders said that they were not interested in any foreign military intervention. So now Reuters is reporting a rebel National Libyan Council leader in East Libya called for a UN-backed airstrike on foreign mercenaries used by leader Muammar Gaddafi against his own people, a spokesman for the council said on Wednesday. Hafiz Goga, a spokesman for the council based in the rebel-held city of Benghazi, told a news conference Gaddafi was using, quote, African mercenaries in Libyan cities, which amounted to an invasion of the oil-producing North African region. So because Gaddafi's using African mercenaries, now the rebel leader, which is the same individual who only 2 days ago said he didn't want foreign intervention, is now calling for UN and NATO mercenaries to invade the country of Libya. Very interesting development indeed. Of course, all this is completely based on humanitarian concerns, as the mass media will obediently tell you, and it has nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that Libya holds the largest amount of oil reserves on the entire African continent. Complete coincidence. Go back to sleep, watch Dancing on Ice. John in Kansas, you're on the air, go ahead.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air, John, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I want you to go to Google if you can, and there's a PDF of unclassified document. It's called, it's basically Con Edison's involvement in 9/11 in World Trade Center. Just type in cryptome.org/con/Edison, E-D-I-S-O-N. And in that article, it talks about how this employee for Con Edison named Fred Sims thought World Trade 7 would collapse at 4:15 p.m. when it collapsed at 5:20 p.m. in reality. And so he knew an hour and 5 minutes ahead of time that World Trade 7 would collapse, even though it was not hit. And also keep in mind, Con Edison was also bombed in the 50s by the guy named George the Mad Bomber Metzke. So that was a former employee. They were bombed, and they were involved in bombings in the past. Also, Con Edison was contracted with the energy grid for Bowling Green District in New York City. And what's interesting about the Bowling Green District in New York City is that it held many architectural firms in the Bowling Green District. It also held firms dealing with intellectual property, maybe setting more secure, dealing with the, this cybersecurity, and a lot of it has to do with intellectual property on the internet. Another thing, there's the South Court District, Court District dealing, and the courts deal with, with the businesses going out of business, basically. It dealt with securities fraud at South Court District. South Court also dealt with, they had cases dealing with securities fraud as well. And what else is interesting?
On the point of Con Edison, I mean, just like Mr. Pullet, Larry Silverstein, they were in on the post 9/11 bounty with their attempt to get $200 million in rebuilding money after 9/11. They failed in that. So certainly a conflict of interest there in attempting to exploit the post 9/11 bounty. And as we know, BBC, CNN were both reporting that Building 7 had collapsed an hour before it actually did. So the word was out ahead of time on that, as we've reported. Thanks for the call. We're going to go to Shay in Washington. You're on the air, Shay. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Paul. This is first-time caller, but I've been listening to you guys every day for months and wanted to thank all of you for what you're doing and all the hard work you guys are putting in. I'm mobilizing locally, and it's just sounding like more and more people are doing the same. And one question that I haven't heard asked by anybody that I feel like is an important question for all of us to keep in mind is, say today is the new V-Day. Say today is Victory Day. We beat the globalists. We've retaken our government. What does life look like to us? I mean, like, are we talking a really fundamental change of the social, political, economic order, or are we just talking, it all just boils simply down to a lot more accountability and transparency or government? I mean, how do you guys see that?
Well, first of all, you don't have a revolution like we've seen in Egypt where there's nothing in the aftermath to replace it and replace the corrupt system and take the reins of power. Because in Egypt, there's a complete vacuum. The so-called revolutionaries, the ones who, haven't been rallied and provocateured by the US embassy, as was reported 3 years in advance, they had nothing to replace Mubarak, which is why the corrupt military dictatorship that was behind Mubarak in the first place simply took the reins of power and is now doing deals with the same personalities that put Mubarak in the first place. So, of course, the beginning of any restoration of the republic is to work out, what's going to replace the corrupt system afterwards. And, of course, we've got very few politicians in Congress and in the Senate that can be tasked with doing that. Rand Paul and Ron Paul are two of them. Certainly every one of their proposals for how a post-corrupt system will look like, their proposals will form the framework of that, key central to which is the abolition of the Federal Reserve. But I don't think we're close anytime soon to restoring the American Republic. I mean, it probably won't even happen in our lifetime, so we're not even at the point of deciding what happens afterwards. We've got to alert millions more people to the fact that it is corrupt in the first place, because, you know, the vast majority of Americans still got their head in the sand and they're still watching, you know, dancing on ice with Bristol Palin or whatever. So you've got a long way to go before we get to that stage. Thanks for the call. Rolling Stone magazine has done a profile of Alex Jones, which has been released today, and it's going to be in the next hard copy issue. And Alex told me about this, I believe, 2 or 3 months ago, that they were doing this piece, because obviously the Rolling Stone journalist who wrote the article was in and around Alex in his office preparing material for the piece. It's a 4-page article on their website. It's mainly positive. The overall impact of it is positive. Certainly when it talks about Alex's personal motivations and his, you know, the history of how he came to be in the role that he's in today, how he was a quote hellraiser when he went up against cops in Dallas, and how that led him to voraciously consume history books and work out how elites throughout history have dominated their populations through the same control methods. So personally speaking, in terms of Alex, it's quite a positive profile. It talks about how Alex doesn't get into the kind of stuff that, you know, is an obsessive habit amongst a lot of Alex's critics, and how this is only benefits his message in the long run. But it does raise certain political issues in an attempt to denigrate Alex's political stance, as I wrote in my blurb today. Population control. The writer cites National Security Memorandum 200, and this is the infamous Kissinger memo, in which they openly state that they're going to use food as a weapon, as a means of thinning third world populations. The writer kind of brushes over that in an effort to portray Alex as exaggerating the issue, but we'll go over it more in the next segment, and we'll be taking your calls as well on the Alex Jones Show live at prisonplanet.tv. Stay tuned, don't go away, we'll be back.
He's the T-Rex of political talk, Alex Jones, on the GCN Radio Network.
Filling in for Alex Jones today, Aaron Dykes will be coming up in the next hour, and he'll be joined by former head of Reaganomics, Paul Craig Roberts. Rolling Stone magazine today is calling Alex Jones the most paranoid man in America, and despite the headline, it's actually quite a positive, encouraging article. One of the things we were talking about before the break is where the writer kind of dismisses Alex's entire stance on population reduction by having his own personal interpretation of Kissinger's National Security Memorandum 200, in which the globalists openly talk about the need to curb the numbers of LDC people, lesser developed countries, and in doing so they talk about using food as a weapon. But the writer of the Rolling Stone article defines it as, quote, little more than government officials beginning to grapple with the strategic implications of runaway population growth. And of course, as we've deeply and exhaustively documented in a series of articles, and indeed in Alex's own documentary film, Endgame, the whole eugenics movement cannot be boiled down to one Henry Kissinger memo. Of course, the history of it betrays its nefarious nature. Of course, eugenics grew amongst the aristocracy in 19th century Britain, and it was then exported. It manifested itself under Hitler's Third Reich, because, of course, John D. Rockefeller's father exported Germany through his bankrolling of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, which led to Mengele and the super race and all this other Nazi ideology. And that's the reason why, you know, the pseudoscience of eugenics became so unpopular after that, and it was had to be rebranded in the 1950s in America and in the West generally as family planning. And now, of course, we see Marie Stopes, who in fact wrote love letters to Hitler, was at the Nuremberg Population Congress, being lauded by the Western media as some great female human rights campaigner, when in fact she was aggressively for the sterilization of the so-called inferior races, you know, black people. So they were all virulently racist individuals pushing eugenics, and then, of course, family planning as a mean to thin races of people who they deemed inferior to the aristocracy. So the population reduction agenda for dummies is the preeminent article where we boil down all this information and cite numerous examples of where the eugenics agenda has now morphed into the family planning abortion agenda. And of course, it goes a whole lot deeper than the Henry Kissinger memo. But in saying that, I mean, the impression I got on the whole from reading this Rolling Stone magazine profile was positive. Of course, I mean, the writer spent a lot of time, obviously, in Alex's company, and that is reflected in the way in which he talks about how Alex is personally motivated to do what he does and how it affects his personal life. A lot of the time, of course, these mainstream media quote profiles will not only denigrate us politically, but they'll go after Alex personally as well. We've had some of the most vicious smears and hit pieces ever witnessed, certainly over the past few years. But on those terms, I mean, the Rolling Stone magazine profile is relatively positive, so I encourage you to read it for yourself. We've got excerpts of it linked up on prisonplanet.com, and you can click through and read the full article at Rolling Stone magazine, and it's entitled Talk Radio's Alex Jones, the most paranoid man in America. Paranoid about the fact that, you know, they're putting sterilants in the water supply, which is precisely what White House science czar John P. Holdren said they should do in his 1977 book Eco-Science. But again, to even discuss it is to be paranoid, the most paranoid man in America. Back to the callers. Scott in Massachusetts, you're on the air. Go ahead, Scott.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to say, sir, that Goldman Sachs, Bear Stearns, the Rothschild family, America's banking system is controlled by international Jewish bankers who have destroyed America's system. And not only that, they control the Federal Reserve. You know, the Jews control America.
Okay, thanks for the call. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned. 1-800-259-9231. We'll be back live. Prisonplanet.tv.
Don't call my name out your window when I'm leaving. I won't even
$101 on reports of Libya airstrikes. We've got the pretext for a quote humanitarian military intervention taking place right now over in Libya. We've got oil and gas prices surging to new levels. But don't worry, because the new iPad 2 is actually thinner than the iPhone 4. So that's what the vast majority of Americans will be talking about this evening. Of course, that's the most important news of the day. Doesn't matter that the whole Middle East and North Africa is melting before our very eyes. There's a new iPad 2, and it's exactly the same as the previous one, except it's a little bit thinner and has a camera on it. just hand over your $600 and you can run with the latest Apple fanboy iPad crowd and talk about it ad infinitum while the world collapses around you. We're going to go to more calls now. Chris in Maryland, you're on the air. Go ahead, Chris.
Good day to you, mate. How you doing today?
Good. Good to speak to you. What's on your mind today?
I'm kind of new to this, and I've talked to on Alex's show here on phone a couple of times, but I've found something kind of interesting here that maybe you could elaborate on or help me with. I'm reading here that the federal government was basically filed for like a Chapter 11, so to speak, bankruptcy under the Emergency Banking Act of March 9th, 1933. And it was declared by President Roosevelt as being bankrupt and insolvent, according to the House Joint Resolution 192. I'm understanding now that we are bankrupt, so we're basically the stooges for these international bankers. So our fight here is basically trying to free ourselves of our independence of these knuckleheaded international bankers, United Nations and the World Bank.
Well, that's precisely the point. And now they're preparing with glee their banker world currency. And, of course, they can't roll that out without there being this debt crisis and this dollar crisis in the United States. Total U.S. debt hits $14.195 trillion, $99 billion away from debt ceiling. We have on PrisonPlanet.com today from Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden. And the article states, now that all auctions from last week have settled, the real debt picture has emerged as of February 28th. Total U.S. debt is $14.194 trillion, a settlement charge of $57 billion on the day alone. As a reminder, the total debt limit is $14.24 trillion, or $100 billion away. So we're about to reach that tipping point of the debt ceiling, which traditionally, in historical terms, is the point which marks the collapse of any country when it can't anymore fund its military foreign adventures or sufficiently take care of its own population at home. So we're reaching that tipping point as we speak. Thanks for the call. Alex in South Korea, you're on the air. Go ahead, Alex.
Hello, Paul. I'm going to get right into this. Everybody heard about how one of the Google workers turned up in Egypt, and it's really strange. And one thing that people don't realize is that the Google CEO, Eric Schmidt, is actually a CFR member, just to remind everybody. And it's so weird, like 3 months ago, I was reading Foreign Affairs, which is the CFR journal, and Eric Schmidt wrote an article stating like how in the future revolutions will be started using the internet and the power of social media. And this was written like, I guess, October. And it's so weird because everything that he wrote in that article is pretty much happening today. And what's interesting is one of the subheadlines he has in the article is The Revolution Will Be Podcast. And that's basically what happened. And now we got this Google worker turning up in Egypt, and people are thinking he's helping start the revolutions. Other people are saying he's not. And after reading that article 3 months ago before all this happened, I tend to agree that all this is happening with Google's help. And help of the CFR, which Eric Schmidt is a member of, so it's really weird.
And I was wondering, it's amazing. There was a report out of I believe it was Reuters, and it said Russia blames Google for stirring Egypt unrest. Forget Russia, Eric Schmidt himself, during a public event, praised this Google cyber activist. His name was Whale Gonim, a young executive at the company. And in fact, Schmidt said directly that he played a very significant role in stoking up and organizing the protests via Facebook and Twitter. So Google CEO admits that this Google exec played a direct and pivotal role in stirring up the Facebook revolution in Egypt. And then you've got the media saying it's all a conspiracy theory invented by Russia and questioning it when it's admitted fact. And Schmidt himself says that the company's proud of this executive for playing a role in the faux revolution in Egypt, which, as we've documented, was known ahead of time by the US embassy, who sent in their operatives to stir it up. Not that the Egyptians didn't have legitimate grievances, but the US knew ahead of time and basically hijacked the revolution, as they've now done in Libya, and are, you know, preparing to go in militarily with US special forces, having already landed, according to sources. But yeah, Schmidt is a regular Bilderberg attendee. In fact, we did an article on this a couple of weeks ago by Steve Watson, 10 ways in which Google runs the world. And the evidence is all there. Google is an integral part of the Big Brother panopticon. It's hooked in via the CIA and the NSA. That's all admitted. It's not a conspiracy theory. And now we have, you know, the search engine being involved in overthrows of foreign governments. So Schmidt's a pivotal player in the New World Order, just like Bill Gates, and just like Bill Gates attended the last Bilderberg meeting in Spain. Schmidt himself is a regular attendee of the globalist confab. And that's why he comes out with these statements about, you know, privacy's dead. Why do people care about privacy? Of course, because his company is directly violating privacy in a myriad of different ways, not least of which, now, forget Google Street View, they've got Google cameras mounted on what look like Segways, and they're going through parks taking pictures of everything. So basically mapping out the entire world. Street View, of course, was the first incarnation of that. And Google's an intimate player in this Big Brother system that's going to get us all in the databases, and basically to collapse any faith we had in, you know, holding on to the last remaining strands of our privacy. Schmidt says privacy doesn't matter, and he goes right ahead and destroys it. And now they're involved in these revolutions as well. Stacey in San Diego, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'd like to touch back on that subject you brought up about Rolling Stone accusing Alex Jones of being overly paranoid. And let's talk about a paranoid conspiracy theory, if you will. Alex has been very good about reporting on FEMA's activities and the things that FEMA does on behalf of the government. And there's a story that I don't believe I've seen Alex report on yet, and that is the FEMA NLE exercise for 2011, and this is for May of this year. And it surrounds the New Madrid Fault Zone in the United States, which is in the Midwest, and it surrounds an earthquake disaster scenario. And this happens to be the 200-year anniversary of the New Madrid Fault earthquake, which happened in 1811. It was a series of two or three earthquakes that were all of a magnitude 8 or greater that occurred in 1811 in February, and they were, you know, devastating at the time, and they would be incredibly devastating today and would cause a massive loss of life. Well, it seems that FEMA has been putting out requisition orders on the Internet to the public sector starting in January of this year. They've put out requisition orders to public entities to fill things like MREs, blankets, underwater body bags, gasoline, bottled water in liters, and they're asking for massive, massive amounts, 140 million MREs. They want 7 million MREs for a 10-day period, two meals a day. That's 140 million meals. So that seems odd to me that if you're running an exercise, why would you need to actually go and purchase these items? So I just wanted to hear your comment on that and know if you guys have researched this story and are going to report on this story.
Well, we're reporting on it right now. National Level Exercise 2011, Private Sector Participation. This is a press release by FEMA.gov. NLE 2011 will simulate the catastrophic nature of a major earthquake in the central United States region of New Madrid Seismic Zone. And as you say, the new the year 2011 is the bicentennial anniversary of the 1811 New Madrid earthquake. And of course, we've carried articles on prisonplanet.com about how a lot of people expect that this earthquake could be set to repeat itself. So FEMA is basically going to simulate the catastrophic aftermath of that earthquake. And as you said, they're going to set up command posts, emergency operation centers, to include federal facilities in the Washington, D.C. area. And of course, don't forget the story we reported last week on PrisonPlanet.com. FEMA, which of course is supposed to be based in America, was at ground zero last week when the New Zealand earthquake struck. So they were conveniently in position there. Of course, you look back to Hurricane Katrina, and it was FEMA that was cutting the communication lines and sabotaging the relief efforts there. And why would they do that? Because every time such a catastrophe occurs and the response is not swift enough, is not good enough, if people die, then the only result that ever happens is that FEMA goes and complains to Congress and gets more power and more funding. So, you know, it's like a business that goes out and fixes windscreens. If there were no broken windscreens, they wouldn't make any money. They'd be out of business. FEMA fixes catastrophes and the aftermath of catastrophes. And so if none occurred, then there'd be no call for them to exist as a federal agency. So they're always conveniently on the ground when these disasters happen, and they often are caught, as in the case of Katrina, sabotaging the relief efforts and escalating the crisis, which eventually leads to them getting more power and funding. We've covered these NLE exercises in the past, and so we'll have all eyes on that one, especially as it relates to the New Madrid fault line, which we've posted numerous articles on prisonplanet.com about that being a very sensitive and potential area for an earthquake. Thanks to the call, Matt in Oklahoma, you're on the air, go ahead. Do we have Matt?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, first-time caller, Prison Planet member, and I just actually had two questions instead of reiterating what you're already conveying. To me, it seems like all this information you guys are doing very well in putting out is so overwhelming. You have all your fluorides at the local level all the way up to the IMB and the international banking. Is there anything that's put together, such as a structure or a hierarchy, that somebody could kind of get a look at and say, okay, I can assist in this region at this particular project, something that of actionable that can actually do something instead of saying, yeah, I'm passing the information, everybody acknowledges it's going on, but what can we truly do about it?
I think what you have to do as a listener is not necessarily try and ape what we're doing. We're basically a news organization, so we are tasked with covering every single issue, which is why it feels overwhelming when there's all these different issues taking place and you feel like you're being bombarded with all this information, which is what we feel like, because that's our job, to cover it every day. But the thing that you as listeners need to do, I believe, is to, like Alex says, pick one individual issue. For example, fluoride in the water. In Canada and the UK and parts of the US recently, we've seen local authorities getting together and saying that they're going to remove fluoride from the water supply, that is artificially added fluoride. And that's because of pressure from local groups and the pressure that has been put on them. So you need to get local and you need to pick one particular issue. It's no good running around like a headless chicken trying to, you know, take the world on your back, because one person can never change everything. But if you pick one individual and then get together with like-minded people in your local area, then you can create the pressure groups that lead to genuine change in your local region, for example, with getting the fluoride out of the water. So I know exactly where you're coming from when you say it's overwhelming. Well, that's because I think too many people are trying to fight on too many different fronts, when the most successful approach would be to spread our info warrior battalions locally and into individual issues on which they can campaign, lobby, and fight. So I think that's the way to do it, rather than to try and take on everything and everyone at once. Thanks for the call. Fred in Ohio, you're on the air. Go ahead.
But anyway, since this knowledge is out there that all the Arab countries are going to be double-crossed, doesn't the Al-Qaeda and the revolutionaries over there know that they will also be double-crossed, as all a lot of nations already have, and so will we be double-crossed, the American people?
Well, it's a good point. You got to realize that these so-called revolutionaries do have genuine grievances, both in Egypt and in Libya. They want to see the corrupt government kicked out. I mean, most of the people in Iraq, you know, weren't fans of Saddam Hussein, but what was to come, I'm sure they'd have preferred to stick with Hussein. As regards Al-Qaeda, I mean, Al-Qaeda is the base. The leaders of Al-Qaeda are all in the pocket of the U.S. military industrial complex. That's why the spiritual leader of the hijackers was meeting there at the Pentagon, Anwar al-Awlaki, just months after 9/11. So regarding the leaders of Al-Qaeda, they're totally in the pocket. The revolutionaries themselves, they're just following their own grievances. And as I talked about earlier in the show, first we had the rebel leader in Libya saying that he didn't want foreign intervention, and now the news today is saying that he's calling for the UN to help oust Gaddafi with airstrikes. So they're trying to get a piece of the pie for themselves, and in that process opening up their country to complete globalist domination, which is exactly why the globalists are hijacking the revolution. We'll be right back after the break. Stay tuned. PrisonPlanet.tv. Jones Show Live. Coming up in the next segment, Aaron Dykes is going to be talking to the father of Reaganomics, Paul Craig Roberts. Be sure to stay tuned for that. BBC News, Frankfurt airport shooting, two US servicemen dead. Two US servicemen have died after a gunman opened fire on a bus carrying American military personnel at Frankfurt airport, police say. At the moment, it appears that the gunman hasn't been identified, so we wait to see if that will be tied into the unfolding situation in Libya and general opposition to US military intervention, which, of course, as a recent Rasmussen poll showed, is shared by the majority of the American people. John, in Michigan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Good. What's on your mind today?
I was wondering, since it's essentially admitted that the anthrax attacks were a false flag attack and the case against Bruce Ivins was complete garbage, I was hoping that you could bring us up to date and summarize the attacks as to what we know today. And specifically, I'd be interested in hearing your take on Dr. Phil Szach.
Yeah, well, we know that the case against Ivins was completely concocted. Of course, the anthrax attacks came in the aftermath of 9/11, in the very days after 9/11, and it emerged later that the entire White House cabinet, Bush and all his advisors, were on Cipro, the anthrax-fighting antibiotic. So when it appeared clear that the government had prior knowledge of the anthrax attack, which of course was used to continue the fear-mongering surrounding the threat of terrorists against America while they prepared the Patriot Act and the police state rollout that was immediately to follow, they had to keep the paranoia running high, and they did so with the anthrax attacks. And it came out that the case against this individual was completely concocted because the attack was a false flag. I believe Steve Watson wrote a story on that recently with all the latest developments, and it'll be in the featured news archive of PrisonPlanet.com. So all the latest developments on Irvine and Bruce Irvin, sorry, and that anthrax attack false flag is contained in that article. Jukebox in North Carolina, you're on the air, go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yes, what's on your mind today?
Okay, you'll have to forgive my ignorance. Is this Paul Watson I'm talking with?
Yes, it is.
Are you the bearded fellow did an interview, had it up on YouTube a few months ago?
I'm not sure what you're talking about. Thanks for the call. Richard in Vermont, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, my name is Richard.
Yeah, go ahead. Hello? Richard, what's on your mind?
Oh, okay, I got on there. I want to say hi to Jim and Kathy down in North Carolina, but I got a question directly. What's a good search engine as an alternative? This isn't like an advertisement or anything. I'm just looking for good information. What's a good search engine besides Google? Because I've totally lost trust in them.
The best one that we've found, which we use on Infowars.com, is startpage.com. And they're all about privacy and not submitting your searches to the government, which Google enjoys doing. So, I mean, that's the one that we recommend people use, startpage.com. Thanks for the call. And we have run out of time for this segment, but coming up is Aaron Dykes, and he's going to be interviewing the father of Reaganomics, Paul Craig Roberts, about a myriad of issues. I've been Paul Joseph Watson, filling in for Alex Jones. You can continue to watch the live stream at prisonplanet.tv. Stay tuned for Aaron Dykes and Paul Craig Roberts. Don't go away.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back. It is the third hour, the 1 p.m. hour. I'm Aaron Dykes, sitting in for Alex. As you know, if you've been listening to the show, he left sick earlier. But he called me into the break talking about the Rolling Stone article again. Their headline is Talk Radio's Alex Jones, the most paranoid man in America. How Jones is trying to overthrow the global Stasi Borg state, one conspiracy theory at a time. And it's not entirely an unfair article. They did spend a lot of time speaking with Alex, trying to get to know who he is, researching his past, becoming familiar with his personal stories. And it's accurate in a lot of ways along those lines. But at the same time, it is a little silly because they're still they're still denying reality out there, not talking about what's really going on in the world, trying to make us look kind of like little people here. When Alex has been so much on the cutting edge, on the threshold of knowing what's really going on, he's been proven right over and over. But it is kind of a positive progression overall. There have been a lot of hit pieces. Only a few years ago, you would see most of these articles completely attacking Alex and just trying to discredit everything he's doing. Now it's more in between the lines, kind of subtle, just trying to belittle the man because they seem to know they can't stop Alex. And he's just going to get bigger and bigger, especially as he continues to be right about so many of these issues. But mainly we want to talk about the Middle East today. And, of course, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we have Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, expert on the economy from the Reagan administration. We're going to talk to him all about oil, what's going on in the Middle East, and what it means for the economy, along with anything else he wants to talk about. His latest headline from today, The Perfidy of Government, Evidence versus Denial, basically about how our government has been treasonous, disloyal, has gone against us by allowing Wall Street to completely hijack the bailout for its own purposes and take over the wider economy at the expense of the middle class and ordinary Americans everywhere. Of course, gold is hitting a new high as tensions mount in the Middle East. That's Kurt Nemo's headline from yesterday. I don't have gold prices today. Can y'all pull that up? But he writes, once again, gold serves as a solid refuge for jittery investors as the U.S. and its globalist partners prepare to unleash the fury of NATO and the prowess of the U.S. military on Libya and thus begin a new round of tension in the oil-rich Middle East. Gold futures closed at a new record high. And, of course, that's what we expect to see, particularly when new pressure is put on oil due to Libya. Gaddafi, the man, his son came out on the press and announced, declared that they were a very humble family, very humble means, that they had very kind of respectful means. But now they have in the Daily Mail, the dictator's dough, the astonishing wealth of Gaddafi and his family revealed. They're estimating that he has at least $30 billion of assets and investments that have been seized through various parts of the Western world, and that may only be the tip of the iceberg. No one is yet sure exactly how much the family owns. That's very interesting. And, of course, we have oil surging in Libya as an airstrike occurred very near to the oil terminal. This was breaking as only an hour ago. There was an earlier report regarding the rebels fighting Gaddafi forces over a Libyan oil port. Excuse me. And we're going to get more into that in detail after the break. I'm Aaron Dykes, sitting in for Alex. Alex will be back tomorrow, we hope, out with just a little flu bug. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts coming up, Infowars.com.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, we are back on March 2nd, 2011. I am Aaron Dykes sitting in for Alex. Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow and feeling better, but that remains to be seen. Right now we want to get more into oil and Libya, but first I just want to mention on GCN Live, you will see Rolling Stone on Alex Jones, the most paranoid man in America. You'll also see on GCN Live the perfidy of government, evidence versus denial, a thorough document from Paul Craig Roberts. We're going to talk to him about that coming up. There's also New Hampshire moves to criminalize TSA grope down procedures. You heard Paul Watson talking about that earlier in the program. That's Kurt Nimmo, also at GCN Live, and so much more. But now we'll mention how there's been an airstrike near the oil terminal, and from what this report indicates, they did not actually hit any terminals, but they're certainly concerned about the infrastructure as the fights go on in the eastern part of Libya. From Reuters, oil prices jumped to near 2.5-year highs on Wednesday after an airstrike near Libya's oil infrastructure kept the market braced for a prolonged disruption from the OPEC nation and worried unrest might spread to other regional procedures. It's hard to say if the Libyan government is trying to target oil infrastructure in the east or whether they're just targeting rebel-held areas, but the market's reacting to this threat either way. Gaddafi pledged in a fiery speech before hundreds of supporters he would crush the revolt against his rule. I don't know if it's just me, but it seems a little reminiscent of when the elder Bush told Saddam Hussein, don't you go after those oil wells, don't you set them on fire. Just kind of reminding us that it has very little to do with true humanitarian concerns, a lot more to do with oil and the dollar and world politics. We see rebels have been fighting Gaddafi forces over Libyan oil port. That's the earlier report from this morning. The opposition fighters fled and regime warplanes hit an ammunition depot on the outskirts of the nearby rebel-held city of Ajabaya. That's just a guess. I'm sure people familiar with Libya would know better than me. The forces seized the port, airstrip, and the oil facilities where about 4,000 personnel work. those reports may not be completely up to date, but we do know that they're concerned about infrastructure and its effect on the price of oil, even as more than 140,000 people flee Libya, and we wait to see if NATO, United Nations, or U.S. will enter Libya under any kind of pretext, military, humanitarian, or otherwise. Already, oil has jumped above $100 per barrel. That's in the AP. From today, of course, oil prices again topped $100 per barrel Wednesday as fighting escalated in Libya and petroleum demand grew in the U.S. Libya is a major oil exporter to Europe and has been embroiled in a civil war that shut down oil production in many parts of the country. Libya's supply disruption could push oil to $130 a barrel. That's from a quote official in Reuters again today. Libya's troubles created the country's worst energy crisis in decades, and supply disruptions to world markets could push oil above $130 a barrel. Of course, you heard Lindsey Williams on the program in the last days and weeks saying that number will probably go to $200, according to his sources. We have Chavez from Venezuela saying that the U.S. is distorting the situation in Libya to justify an invasion, basically dismissing the humanitarian crisis concerns and the rest of it. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez claims U.S. criticism of Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi has a clear aim, military invasion. Let's not get carried away by the drums of war, because the U.S., I am sure they are exaggerating and distorting things to justify an invasion, Chavez said Monday, according to Venezuelan state media. The Human Rights Council in Geneva, Switzerland, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton spoke there, saying the U.S. was exploring all possible options and nothing is off the table so long as Libyan government countries continue to threaten and kill Libyan citizens. I don't know if it is distorted, but we do expect the U.S. would want to be in the region, and that parallels with what Paul Joseph Watson has written about today, that the Russian military claims the Libya airstrikes against the protesters did not happen. They at least are saying that the claims that that Gaddafi launched airstrikes against protesters did not happen, saying that it was a key event seized upon by the global media as a justification for a humanitarian military intervention, and that it was a hoax. That's very interesting. We'll see how the facts play out, but it's not, I wouldn't put anything past them. And, of course, it would be within their interest to further enter the region, even though Secretary of Defense Robert Gates has warned that we're already too overstretched in the Middle East, and then another country might be very difficult. That does tie in with Cameron backtracking on Libya's no-fly zone as the U.S. distances itself, stating that Obama has publicly distanced himself from Cameron's suggestion NATO should establish a no-fly zone over the country and that rebel forces should be armed. But, of course, nothing is said and done yet. I believe we have some callers on the line, if we could go to those. Do we have that? Anyone? Okay, Dave in the Ukraine, let's hear what you have to say.
Yeah, hi there. I just wanted to say that I think the whole thing with Google and the InfoWars is coming to a hilt. They've seemed to be blackballing emails to InfoWars.com. I've wrote several emails over Gmail. And as a result, on a brand new email account, they asked me for my cell phone number and wrote the reason was because they had noticed suspicious activity. In all reality, I'd only written a couple emails from the account. One of them was to contest at Infowars.com. The other thing is I'd asked someone at the site there to check the last video entries. I sent a video that I worked on for 2 weeks and it didn't seem to make it in there, but it seems very real that Google's waging war on InfoWars. You might test it out yourself. As far as people that are worried about Google and their privacy, there's quite a few services out there that offer proxies and they'll take care of that for you. So,
Yeah, thanks for the call. I'm not sure, of course, what's going on with the email itself. Of course, InfoWars has been attacked in the past and been sort of targeted by Google's latest policies. I'm not sure on that, but we will try to double-check that everyone's been entered into the contest. Of course, the answer to 1984-1776 contest wrapped up last night, and I know Phil has been working hard on making sure everyone's in there. We're going to double back and try to make sure we didn't skip anyone over. So maybe you want to send us just a follow-up email on that. But Google, of course, is becoming more ever-present in our lives all the time, and the InfoWars mission is probably going to clash with some of Google's policies. Already they're delisting so-called content farming sites. I'm sure InfoWars could be targeted by that. And then, of course, Google is involved in the foreign policy, the politics of foreign policy we see. A caller mentioned earlier with Watson that he saw Eric Schmidt had been speaking at the CFR. I've also come across that Google is a corporate member of the CFR. So we know they're intervening in all kinds of things in our lives, and we will try to do the best we can to stay independent of that. And we'll see what happens from there. Do we have another caller? I don't have the list. Bill in Minnesota. Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Hey, I just called to try to see if I could get Alex's proper address. I just sent him a package of material via certified mail, and I just got it back today. It's undeliverable. So could you give me his address, I could get this to him, because I have criminal charges filed against some people in the IRS and a federal magistrate judge here in Minnesota.
Okay, guys, so it is the P.O. Box number. Yes, sir, our mailing address is P.O. Box 19549, Austin, Texas, 78760, and that is a USPS address. So if you didn't send it that way, but it sounds like you did, Bill.
Evidently, I had 10549. So, but anyway, it's a criminal action because they've been stealing money out of my Social Security benefit. And I wrote and told them, I showed them the law. And if you don't answer within 30 days, according to law, you acquiesce to everything that I stated. Well, they just ignore you like they always do. So I filed criminal charges in the courts of the United States at common law in Fargo, North Dakota, since I couldn't file here in Minnesota because one of the magistrate judges here in Minnesota is a defendant. And plus, I demand a federal grand jury investigation of the United States Congress and their criminal conduct for allowing these gangsters to operate within the United States of America. And I ask that the federal grand jury investigation not be limited to issues of the Internal Revenue Service. And I'm sending out copies of this stuff so that he'll understand.
All right. Well, certainly the IRS is criminal in so many ways, and we wish you well with that. Yeah, send us your stuff, and we'll take a look. But mainly that's between you and the courts. Do we have another caller? Mike, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hello. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing good. Thanks for calling. I guess we're up against the music. Why don't you go ahead and hit us with your question, and we'll come back right after the break.
If anybody wants to republicforTheUnitedStates.org to see about the Act of 1871 as far as creating the U.S. corporation.
Okay, we're going to be right back. Infowars.com. I'm Aaron Dykes filling in.
This is the end. Beautiful friend.
Okay, we are back on this March 2nd, 2011 broadcast, and this is not the end, but it is pretty good music to come in with. At the bottom of the hour, coming up in the next segment, we're going to have Dr. Paul Craig Roberts to give us his breakdown on the economy, the implications in the Middle East, oil, and a lot more. We just had a caller. I'm not sure if it was his connection or if he just wasn't too articulate. I know he was mentioning the U.S. as a corporation. Certainly, we've been taken over by corporations, and I know a lot of the fine print There's a difference between the United States of America, the United States, and the use of the commercial code, the Admiralty stuff. I'm not really an expert on that. I know a lot of you are somewhat familiar with that. Send me some information if you want. Certainly that's going on, and there's a lot of deception that's been standing for a long time. We're going to go to another caller. I just wanted to mention this odd-end item. The American Eagle silver uncirculated coin, the production of the U.S. Mint American Eagle silver uncirculated coins continues to be temporarily suspended because of unprecedented demand for Eagle silver bullion coins. So just another indicator of the pressures on the commodities market, on the pressures deriving from the collapse of the U.S. dollar and all the things going on with oil due to foreign policy in the Middle East. But right now, let's take another caller. I believe it's Jason in Virginia. Is that who's on the line?
Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, great to talk to you all. Love the work that you all do.
Thank you.
Follow it as much as I can. My question is, can you still hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead with your question.
Okay. In Alex's movies and other articles, you see you have your European Union and they're after the North American Union, African Union and Asian Union is the uprising, and what we're seeing now in the Middle East is that will that eventually implement the African Union as a globalist continue to try to take over the world?
That's interesting. Of course, the African Union is already underway, and they have a body and a military force that does things in the region from time to time. I forget the exact name of it, but there's also been kind of a Mediterranean Union proposed as kind of a secondary union between, for instance, France and other European countries, along with at least some of the lesser Middle Eastern countries. And we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the Arab League body in the future either. But yes, there are about 10 regions across the globe who will be kind of unified according to the areas. But it's all leading to global government down the line. I'm not 100% up to date on which union exactly is going to be brought into the Middle East, but I would expect to see possibly something like that. What do you think, Jason?
I think the exact same way.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. And let's take one more here from Ron in Seattle, I believe.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing? I can hear you, Ron.
How are you?
Come through, please.
Okay. My question is this. I feel like I am a target for, I'm not sure, but it has to be a government something, conspiracy, whatever you want to call it. But I have a question about how would one get their house debugged, or two, prove to anybody that a mind control is a real situation and that I am a victim. I've called the FBI, I've called my Congress, my Senate.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to help you a whole lot more. I would imagine that's a little difficult to prove. I'm not saying it's not going on. Certainly those kinds of things are going on. Is there some particular reason you believe you're being targeted?
My particular reason, well, I was in the hospital about 3 months ago, and it all started after that. I was in ICU for 3 days. And the reason why I believe it's Social Security is because they wanted me to call my lawyer to cancel my Social Security claim that has been going on for 2.5 years. I could have cared less about it until this all came about. And the problem that I have is proving it to people that this is real. You can't go to your family. I've already had the police out here once, and I don't know what to do. I don't know where to turn. I need some help with this. It is a real system out there. I saw a blurb on one of Alex's
media. All right,
media
Ron, we're coming up on the break. I'm sorry we're out of time. We're coming back with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. I wouldn't be able to help you specifically with that anyway. Good luck, and we'll be back at InfoWars.com. I'm Aaron Dykes filling in. Okay, we are back on Infowars.com, The Alex Jones Show. I'm Aaron Dykes filling in on this March 2nd, 2011, and I'm honored to be joined by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. He is the father of Reaganomics and a former head of policy at the Department of Treasury during the Reagan years. He's a columnist, a former editor for the Wall Street Journal. He's testified on numerous occasions to congressional committees. He's written or co-written over 8 books, and his latest, How the Economy Was Lost, The War of the Worlds, details why America is disintegrating. Dr. Roberts, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you, Aaron.
Hi, yeah, you may not remember me, but I was out there interviewing you, I believe, just over a year ago.
I remember so it's very much.
Nice to talk to you again. Well, if we could break down the oil price tensions in the Middle East and what you think is going on with Libya, or whatever else you'd like to get into first, sir.
Well, you know, Libya, if the revolution continues to succeed, we'll probably have a more complete revolution than Egypt. In Egypt, it was peaceful in the sense that the protesters or the revolutionaries did not bring violence to bear. And nothing really changed except one or two people at the top. The entire ruling class is intact. The bureaucracy is intact. The American embassy is still there. And so it remains to be seen where Egypt is going to be much different than before. In Libya, thanks to the Gaddafi's mistake, he's forced violence upon the protesters, and parts of the military have gone over to the revolutionaries, and many of the members of the Gaddafi government, including apparently one of his sons, have defected. If this war, which is now going on, succeeds, the clearing out of the upper crust in Libya will be more complete, and there'll be more chance for real change rather than just another representative of the existing powers. So that's my my take on Libya. The oil price is being attributed to the discontent, which is widespread in the Middle East, and no doubt this is part of it, but it could well be another part. Or the new investment devices that Goldman Sachs came up with in 2008 that has introduced massive speculation into commodity markets. Until just a few years ago, speculators in commodity markets had position limits imposed on them by regulation so that speculation could never determine the outcome of the markets. It was only a relatively small part of the participants. The market consisted largely of growers in the case of grains and producers in the case of oil, and then the users, the cereal companies that wanted the grains and the refinery companies that wanted the oil. And so speculators were just like a middleman to be sure that supply and demand stayed in balance. But with changes that Goldman Sachs got passed, the regulators, it then became possible for speculators to dominate the markets. And you may remember in 2008 when the oil price ran way up, it went up from something like $30 up to $140-something.
Right.
And there was no supply shortage. There was no increase in demand. It was all the result of this new financial speculative instrument that Goldman Sachs had got the regulators that it controls to approve. So now you have this new reason for prices to rise. In fact, that's what's happening to world food prices. That's why now there's so many people are starving due to the push-up in the grain price. A lot of people say, oh, it's all because of ethanol, and that's a part of it. But the main part is that the investment banks in Wall Street got the laws changed so that speculation can now dominate the commodities markets. So it's another contribution that Wall Street has made to our welfare and the welfare of the world.
And it's amazing how the monster that created the true economic crisis just continues to thrive and take more victims. But we know there's oil's obviously going to go up in the short term, and we know it's tied to the dollar as reserve currency. Of course, that's been one of the biggest issues in the past 2 years. Where do you see the current stuff going on in the Middle East? What do you see that affecting the long-term issue of whether or not the dollar can or will remain the reserve currency, and what else might come in its place?
Well, you know, Aaron, it's ironic. But if these rebellions, revolutions succeed in the Middle East, and these Arab countries actually get governments that are not American puppet governments, and that are not part of the American empire, and don't serve American hedge enemy in the Middle East, it could actually result in saving the dollar, because we might have to withdraw and give up the unaffordable effort that we are making to achieve military hegemony over the world. That's what's bankrupting us. That's what's bankrupting us, and that's what's driving the dollar down from all the money creation that's part of funding a $1.5 trillion budget deficit, of which $1.1 trillion is the military security complex. So if these lands succeed and they actually do get independent governments that are responsive to their own people rather than to Washington, it will make the American effort to dominate the Middle East redundant. It'll be finished. We won't be able to dominate it without the puppets. And therefore, that could actually help us save the dollar and change our whole approach to the world and scale back the military security complex and get the budget deficit under control. It would be a very good thing.
Well, that's certainly been the elephant in the room, but I would imagine we're still a long way off from scaling back that empire. But I was very encouraged that Ron Paul was not the only voice during the CPAC conference, which was around the time the Egypt stuff was unfolding, to call for scaling back the troops and suggest that maybe we shouldn't be subsidizing dictators only to replace other bad governments in the region to try to impose our will. What do you think about the calls that are at least on the agenda is something about cutting back this empire, if only for the debt and deficit sake?
Yes, well, you know, Ron Paul, I think, is a sincere person, and he's making the point from the standpoint of liberty and freedom. I don't know how many of the people who might line up with him will have that same motive. There are other motives that are causing people to become less tolerant of all the wars, and that is what's happening to the dollar, because some of them are beginning to realize that the power of the United States really rests on the dollar as reserve currency, and if they lose that role, we can no longer exercise the kind of influence and power we have. We would lose control over the international financial system. Some of them are also beginning to realize the implications of $1.1 trillion military security annual budgets when you have $1.5 trillion deficits. And the implication is, if you're going to continue to have that kind of a military security budget, you're going to have to axe Social Security and Medicare. And so and some people are already calling for that. So when they are presented with the notion that they're going to have to renege on benefits, that the American workforce has paid 15% of their payroll for their entire working lives, mm-hmm. that they're going to take this away. Why? So they can pay for wars? So that's producing others who come to Ron Paul's side of it. But that motive is different from Ron Paul's motive. He, I think, has the motive that it's just purely liberty and freedom. So we have others coming to him who are beginning to see that the cost of the wars may be paid by decimating Social Security and Medicare, and others who see that the war is threatening the dollar as reserve currency. So yes, a coalition could build, but it would be up against the very powerful military security complex, which can finance opponents in political campaigns of those people trying to reduce the war. And it's hard to say that who would prevail in that type of a struggle. And also, I think the CIA is committed to the wars. And it's committed to the puppet governments because its influence is everywhere. It penetrates everything. And who knows? We may have other false flag events that make it impossible to curtail the wars because people get all enraged again. And we could have false flag events that make the politicians around Ron Paul who are trying to begin thinking about how to wind these wars down, to make them look like they're not patriotic or they're not aware of the real threat, or they're not going to support the troops and the war on terror. So it's the game is far from over. You know, the problem, Aaron, is that those forces in the government that have these hidden agendas have gotten away with so much. They're very audacious now, and there's no end to their ability to pull off false flag events that would further their goal of continuing the wars and continuing the effort to acquire hegemony.
It's outrageous, but I totally agree. We would expect to see more false flag action, as you say, in the region to keep our troops overseas. It's just sickening. I feel like we should shift gears to get into your most recent article from today, The Perfidy of Government, Evidence versus Denial. And if you could get into that, sir, but along with the Pentagon, who's tried to blame parts of the 2008 financial crisis on supposed terrorists, on supposed hostile foreign nations, as if we don't know who's running the derivatives from Wall Street, from the City of London, and the other financial centers. Could you get into that, sir?
Well, of course, you know, it's bin Laden running the derivative market out of a cave in Afghanistan.
I don't even know how they can make that claim. It's
Yes, I'll be glad to do that. First, let me say that I think the most exploited part of the American population is the military families. They're the ones who are being used for hidden agendas to fight wars in behalf of mega-rich armaments industries and in behalf of the neoconservatives' ideology of hegemony. And then no one is as brutally exploited in the United States today than the armed services and the military families. They're the ones who are suffering the most from the perfidy of their own government. Now, the column that you spoke about is simply just a book report on three books. I'm simply reporting the nature of three books, which I think would wake up any American as to what is happening in front of their eyes. One book is by Matt Tabby. It's called Griftopia. It was published in 2010. That is just a couple of months ago. And it shows the inside story of the financial crisis, how it all came out of the deregulation of the financial market, driven by Wall Street itself, the investment banks such as Goldman Sachs, and by the idiocy of top policymakers such as Alan Greenspan, the Fed chairman, head of the SEC, Arthur Levitt, and the various secretaries of the Treasury from Rubin all the way through the current one, through Paulson to Geithner. And the policies of Greenspan are being continued by Bernanke. So what the story that Tabby tells is how our top policymakers and the powerful investment banks deregulated the financial markets so they could rip off everybody, and they succeeded. Massive fraud, massive criminality, not just on the part of the investment banks, but also on the part of the public policymakers. And no one's been held accountable. They got away with it. The next book that I take up is by Charlie Savage. It's called Takeover. Charlie Savage is a summa cum laude graduate of Harvard with a master's degree in law from Yale Law School. And he documents the destruction of American civil liberties and of the constitutional separation of powers by the Bush-Cheney regime. He goes through it and gives every inch of the story, shows who the culpable parties are, such as John Yoo and Bisbee. Bisbee is now a federal judge. John Yoo holds a tenured position at the Bolt School of Law at the University of California, Berkeley. And so we are now rewarding with prestigious positions the people who are absolutely inimical to American civil liberties and to the Constitution.
Okay, Dr. Roberts, we are hitting a break. We'll be right back on the other side. And certainly we're going to hear more about how government has hijacked for the interest of a narrow band of people at the expense of us all. We'll be back, InfoWars.com.
Day after day, alone on a hill. The man with the foolish grin.
Okay, we are back in the last segment with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. Any way you look at it, everything to do with the economic crisis was bending the rules for the benefit of a few elites. And now we're, you know, closing down on pensions, taking back things, as you point out, people have put money into for decades. But they don't hesitate to give money to Wall Street, and that's just part of your article on the perfidy of government. But switching back to Libya, I forgot to ask you, do you expect to see a U.S.-backed intervention in the region, sir?
I don't know. I think that we'd probably like to do that so we can leave them with a puppet government. But unless, you know, Gaddafi can stall his own fall long enough for us to create all this concern about humanitarian lives and so on that we would use as a cover, it would take a longer period of rebellion for us to be able to get in there, in my opinion. You know, let me use our last few minutes to get to the third book.
Yes, sir.
Perfidy of Government, and that is the most remarkable book of all. It's by James Douglas. It came out, I think, 2 years ago, maybe three. It's called JFK and the Unspeakable. And of course, JFK is President John F. Kennedy. And what Douglas does is to prove beyond any reasonable doubt that Kennedy was murdered by the CIA. He proves this several times over. He proves it first with declassified top secret documents that have been coming out in over the years. He proves it by the testimony of eyewitnesses who were excluded, whose testimony was excluded from the Warren Commission report, and who were silenced with threats all of their lives until old age, when they had nothing else to live, and they came up and started talking, and there's so many of them, and the story is always the same. And he then proves it by overwhelming circumstantial evidence. And so we have a situation, and it happened in this way. Kennedy was brought face-to-face with reality by the Cuban Missile Crisis, because he saw that he and Khrushchev were on the verge of pushing a button that would have annihilated the world, certainly the United States and the Soviet Union. And he was being pushed in that direction by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he resisted, and he found he was isolated in his own government, and he had to turn to Khrushchev through back channels for help. And Khrushchev was feeling the same pressures and having the same reactions, and realized sincerity in Kennedy and made the public announcement he would withdraw the missiles. And Kennedy made the public announcement the United States would not invade Cuba. Well, this incensed the military security complex, the CIA, and the Secret Service that was supposed to be protecting Kennedy, because he had already pulled the plug on the Bay of Pigs and not sent in the Air Force. He was trying to open connections to Castro. He had the test ban, nuclear test ban treaty with Khrushchev, and Kennedy was seen from within his government as soft on communism, a security risk, somebody who was selling out the country to Soviet deceptiveness.
Dr. Roberts, we're running out of time. We really appreciate you joining us. And I totally agree. There's so many hundreds of data points connecting the CIA to the JFK thing, including how they had a team on the ground during the missile crisis. We'll have to get into that some other time. The rebroadcast is starting right after the end of my voice. Alex Jones is on the show, Paul Watson, and we break down the Middle East. InfoWars.com.